our first impression from the readings might be about the battle, the strength, you know, blessed be the Lord, my rock, and trains my hands for battle, and the first reading all about the different gear needed for warfare. And then there's this conflict with Herod. But I think it would be good to start with something that's going on even deeper, and that is what Jesus is up to. Yeah, there's a battle going on, but Jesus, once he's on the scene, changes everything. So let's reflect a little bit on this encounter with the Pharisees and their mention of Herod. So the Pharisees come up to him and tell him to go away because Herod wants to kill him. Now, this is an interesting thing because it's not clear from the scriptures if Herod really did want to kill him. And we know that the Pharisees, for the most part, were fiercely against him. So there's a little bit of subtlety going on here. Herod, we know, first of all, he wasn't, even though he was a strong leader, he wasn't a strong man. We know how ambivalent he was toward John the Baptist, and he didn't really want to kill John the Baptist. And once he did, it bothered him. And when Jesus came along and Herod thought, was this John the Baptist again? And he was more tormented than antagonistic. And in the Passion, remember, Herod wanted to see Jesus work a sign. So it's not clear from the scriptures that Herod really wanted to kill him. It's possible that Herodias wanted to kill him because she was the fiercer, stronger of the two. In any case, we don't know exactly what Herod wanted, but the Pharisees are the ones who convey the message. And they're not exactly trustworthy messengers. They might be making this up, and it wouldn't be the first time that they set a trap or tried to test him. Or they might be twisting the situation for their own advantage. They might be pretending to be his friend in order to get rid of him because they didn't want him around either. So it's a little tough on the human level to know what's going on. But Jesus never gets trapped in human complexities or manipulations. This is why what's great about this reading is Jesus' response. Go and tell that fox. I love that. Who's the fox here? A fox is a cunning animal, a clever, deceitful animal. That's the kind of traditional association with foxes. And the scholars tell us that the word fox here is feminine, a she-fox. Now, I don't know Greek well enough. I don't know if there's any other kind of word for fox. But anyway, some commentaries think that when he said, go tell that fox, he really meant Herodias because she's the cunning one. And she's probably the more fierce enemy. But in any case, go tell that fox. Like putting it back on the Pharisees, as if assigning them, like he assigned the disciples, to go and proclaim the gospel. It's a great twist. You go and proclaim what I'm up to here. I'm driving out demons, I'm performing miracles, and I'm on my way to Jerusalem like all the prophets. So he tells the Pharisees, his enemies, to proclaim to Herod, who they say is his enemy, that he's fulfilling the role of a prophet on his way to Jerusalem. It's just extraordinary. And you see, Jesus' answers are always like this. They just so overpower the questioners or the opposition. And so that's what's happening here. Go and tell the fox, as if to say, you think you can outfox me? You think you're more clever than I am? You think you can manipulate me? Well, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to tell it to you straight. I'm going to drive out demons. I'm going to heal people. I'm going to go to Jerusalem. Today, tomorrow, and the next day. Today, doing this. Tomorrow, suffering. The next day, I'm going to rise again. The third day usually is a hint toward the resurrection. So when he's talking about today, tomorrow, and the third day, he's talking about his public ministry, his death, and his resurrection. This is who I am, you fox. I love that. Then once he brings up Jerusalem and says, this is where prophets go to die, this is an extraordinary thing to say. It's like a prophecy of his passion. I'm going there to die because that's where prophets go to die. Jerusalem, Jerusalem. Now, after making this bold statement about being more clever than Herod and any fox, and about being absolutely committed to his mission to go to Jerusalem, then he turns again and offers this tender, reveals this tender concern for Jerusalem. You kill the prophets, you stone those who sent to you, but I want to gather you under my wings like a hen. Now, the two animals in this gospel are the fox and the hen. And you know how that works. Foxes are enemies of hens, and hens have no defense against foxes. But here's the hen going into the den of the fox for a victory by laying down his life. It's exactly the same as the wolf and the lamb, no, which is more common images for Jesus. Jesus is the lamb who deliberately walks into the territory of the wolf to lay down his life. Here's the hen with his tender concern for his people, willing to lay down his life for them. That's how he's going to gather the people under his wing or into his embrace, into the embrace of the Father. So Jerusalem, Jerusalem, this is what I really want. Here I am, I'm going to do my mission. But what I really want is to gather you all into the embrace of the love of God. And it's going to happen when you say, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. Now that's a reference to Palm Sunday, remember? He enters into Jerusalem and they say, here he is, Hosanna, Hosanna, blessed is the King. And it happens, here he is, the King who has come to lay down his life. So this is just an overwhelming response to the trickiness of the Pharisees or of Herod or both, whatever was going on the human level. God is way beyond that. Now, I'd like to reflect a little bit on this idea of the prophet, because prophets throughout the Old Testament proclaim the word and are opposed and usually killed. We know that. So for Jesus to identify himself as a prophet is to take on that whole tradition. I am sent to proclaim the word. Of course, he is the word. He's more than a prophet, but he fulfills all the prophecies, and I'm going to endure. I'm going to take on the opposition. I don't know why this came to me, but there were lots of Old Testament passages in which the prophets say, here I am suffering, even though I'm doing the will of God. Jeremiah is probably the most obvious one, but almost all the prophets say, here's the word, and I'm going to say this even though you oppose me, and I'm going to suffer it. The passage that came to my mind is actually from the Psalms, but you know the spirit of this. The strength of the prophets and the suffering that they're willing to endure to be faithful to God, and the lament. I mean, the prophets are sometimes just complaining about how bad things are, but then they say, but I'm doing the will of God. Here's an example from the Psalm. This is Psalm 55. I ran into this yesterday, maybe why it came to mind yesterday's midday prayer. So the psalmist is complaining that, well, everybody's against him and people are betraying him and, you know, traitors and, you know, they're all against me. And then he says, even his intimate companion has turned against him. Prophecy probably referring to Judas. As for me, I will cry to God, and the Lord will save me. Evening, morning, and at noon, I will cry and lament. Now, what's happening here, this is the psalmist revealing both his suffering and his confidence in God. Now, the reason why I'm mentioning it to you, because when we look at Jesus, we say, well, Jesus, he's in charge of the whole situation. So he's the Lord. He comes in the name of the Lord, and no problem for him, we say, even though he's going to die, he's willing to die. But we are also called prophets by baptism, priest, prophet, and king. So we as prophets are facing this same thing, struggle, suffering, opposition, but we have to also have the strength of the prophets by putting our trust in him. That's why I'm trying to make this connection. Here's what he says. I will cry out to him. He will deliver my soul in peace in the attack against me. I'll be at peace even though I'm attacked. For those who fight me are many, but he hears my voice. This is constantly in the prophets. In the prophets, they're saying, I've got this problem, but the Lord's on my side. God will hear and will humble them, the eternal judge, for they will not amend their ways. They have no fear of God. The traitor has turned against my friends. He has broken his word. His speech is softer than butter, but war is in his heart. Maybe this is why the passage came to mind. speech softer than butter. That's the prophecies here. Oh, we're on your side. Why don't you go away? Because you can save your life from the threats of Herod. Their speech is softer than butter. But war is in his heart. His words are smoother than oil, but they are naked swords. Sounds like politicians, actually. Politicians always sound good, but they don't always mean what is it's election season now. So you hear all these glorious words, softer than butter. And trust your cares to the Lord. He will support you. He will never allow the just man to stumble. But you, O God, will bring them down to the pit of death. Deceitful and bloodthirsty men shall not live half their days. O Lord, I will trust in you. So this is it. Now, another reason I'm bringing this up is because the first reading is this famous passage from Ephesians about the spiritual warfare and the spiritual armor. Why do we need this spiritual armor? Because we are in a battle, not only against Herod and the Pharisees and human opponents, including politicians, but even more spiritual enemies who are much more powerful and much more subtle, whose words are even smoother, more, even softer than butter, more tempting, more appealing. This is the spiritual enemies. And so what St. Paul is doing here is removing the veil from that level of our battle so that we can see that we are in a very serious struggle here, but we also have very powerful weapons. So just like the prophets knew that in the experience of being opposed, they had the strength of the Lord, that's what we have, and even more so. So, our struggle is not with flesh and blood, not with merely human opponents, but with principalities and powers and evil spirits in the heavens. Certainly, there's a lot of evil spirits behind the evil movements that we can identify. I mean, we look at, like I say, certain political ideologies or cultural movements, and we say, that's so evil. Right to identify it as evil, but don't simply pin it on so-and-so. Pin it on the evil one who's behind it all, and then use the weapons that are effective against spiritual enemies. And then I won't go into all of these, the armor and the sword and the arrows and the helmet and all these things that we have, spiritual defenses, spiritual weapons. Prayer is a great weapon. Why is it so powerful? Because it's a reliance on the power of God. Why is God so powerful? Because he's love. And love is the most powerful of all forces. Love is the most powerful of all forces because God is love. Jesus saying, I'm not going to worry about the fox, and I'm not going to be intimidated today, tomorrow, or the next day. That's love expressing its strength. Love can't be stopped. Love can't be defeated, ultimately. It could look defeated in this life and in the moment, but love is the most powerful. And when we take up the shield of faith, or we take up the helmet of salvation, or the sword of the Spirit, what we're really doing is opening ourselves to the power of the love of God, which is an unstoppable force. It's a sure victory when we're talking about the love of God applied in time and in the world. So that's what we're facing today. It's a realistic look at the problems, the difficulty. The prophets don't say everything's fine because God's on my side, and they don't say everything's terrible and I'm going to be defeated. They say, everything is not fine. I'm in a battle, but my trust is in God. So it's a very realistic view of the situation. And that's what we're supposed to have. Yes, we're in a battle, but we don't lose our peace. Yes, things are bad and they seem to be getting worse, but that doesn't mean we're defeated or even discouraged, because we have the strength that comes from God. So it's a beautiful message, and it's certainly way more than whatever Herod and the Pharisees were up to, and way more than whatever politicians or cultural warriors or influencers on the social media, whatever they're up to. We're talking about the real power at work in the world, the love of God.